Well, howdy. Bet you were waiting for the intro music, weren't you? Yeah, so was I. Yeah, but you'll have that. This is The Horn. Head on RadioNetwork.com. That's our home, where you can find the Listen Live button. I'm Bob Kincaid. And yes, we are live in Washington, D.C. Where's the intro music, Bob, you might ask? And I might answer, I have no idea. I mean, it's not like I don't know where the show file is. I just don't know why this mixer won't play it. I mean, for instance, we can try this. Just for the fun of it. And see, the file's playing, but, well, damn it, there's no music happening. Now, there's one other thing we can try. And God knows I've been trying it pretty much all afternoon. Yeah, that's exactly like it's supposed to be. Yeah, sure is. So anyway, all you get to do for the next 3 hours is pretty much listen to me or anybody else who wants to call in and engage in conversation. Let's see, seeing an email come in. Let me guess. Volume is poor. Adjust thy speakers. Okay? But at any rate, no, we will have... No, all the switches are thrown. Yeah, if I do that, see, it gets really ugly. Although, for all I know, that was just right for some folks. So, generally speaking, we have good audio coming out of, coming out of the microphone or whatever, but for some reason or another, there's no audio available for playback or intros or anything like that. So, just kind of weird. All right, cool. In the chat room, I'm seeing... sounding good on this end, listening via computer, real player. Now it just got really loud. And we're trying to keep, we're trying to manage some of that. But at any rate, no, I hated not being on the air yesterday. And like I said in a tweet, that was a story in itself. It was a minor miracle. Well, no, not a miracle. Yeah, see, there we go. Sorry, just checking. Okay, thanks, Jack. Made a name change? What, Jack? At any rate, it's Tuesday, not Monday. It feels like Monday, but then again, Monday felt like, well. And Saturday felt like hell. Because here's how it was all supposed to shake out. It is summer, and school is out. And the plan was to go over and she's with us now. Go over and get Doodle, the youngest of our merry little tribe. And she's about 90 miles away. So. Agnes took off to go and do that. while I took off to go and do Prism. Neither of which happened. Because we were planning on leaving Sunday, this all had to be accomplished on Saturday. But said vehicle broke down somewhere in the wilds of, and I mean, well, as in not civilized, of Clay County, West Virginia. And it wasn't like Agnes could just leave the vehicle and go, no, because that being as it was Clay County, West Virginia, the vehicle would have been stripped, and there wouldn't have been so much as a nut or bolt left by the time we got back to it. Clay County is a wild and weird place. So instead, we wound up having to go after Doodle on Sunday. And then left West Virginia for D.C. on Monday. Had a lovely drive up here, by the way. It was Ferg and Doodle and me. And I have in, I guess, my dotage become unfond of interstate highways. I think the beginning of that was way, way, way back when I first read William Least Heat Moon's Blue Highways and realized how much of America there was to be seen off the beaten path. And in fact, how much more pleasurable driving could be if one was, in fact, off that beaten path. So we have found alternative routes. Two-lane road down to get on I-64 to get us out of West Virginia, over into Virginia, and then back onto two-lane road up through literally some of our family history. Up through the very first places where the very first Kincaid put down roots and called the place home. There probably was an accent involved, him being Scottish and all. And that wanders you up to Harrisonburg, Virginia, where you can then get on another little two-lane highway that runs through the very heart and soul of the Civil War's Blue Ridge campaign. Mm-hmm. And that'll eventually kick you out on Interstate 66, where you really have no choice but to do some interstate driving for about an hour. But that's tolerable. So we got in here yesterday evening and got unpacked and got unloaded, and now we're here. We're here to do 2 weeks of serious ache act work. In hopes of bringing more folks I see. In hopes of bringing more folks on board with the ACE Act. Well, I'm going to have to go and see this, Jack. What in the world could we be talking about? Yeah, noisy keyboard, huh? Talkers Tuesday? Agnes? What? We'll have to fix that. Agnes, meanwhile, is back on the ground in the home studio at the mansion in West Virginia. She will be taking your calls this evening, as well as your calls directly into the studio here via Skype. If you want to reach the program via Skype later in the program, it's what it always has been, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Whereas if, on the other hand, you wish to reach the program via the plain old telephone service, POTS, it's the usual 304-658-3333. Okay? So that's not too much different from how it ordinarily is. A note, if I may, here at 10 minutes past the hour as we get the show going for this evening. Obviously, there will be no bumper music, and there will be no annoying audio from right-wing gas bags and asshats. There will be phone calls, your calls, and me. Yeah, sure, it narrows things down a little bit, but we'll still have a pretty, I think we can have fun. A little reminder, if I may, please. This being the beginning of June, I will tell you now that we closed out the month of May still in a hole. The hole was reduced by about it was down to about $265. And many thanks to Randy for getting us started, and to Cindy for her help yesterday, as well as help from James and a couple of others, I do believe. Believe me, after the weirdness of the past weekend, I'm lucky I know my own name. But anyway, and that's another thing. You know, your vehicle is lost, is out in the wild somewhere, when the roadside assistance folks from the insurance company can't find you. It was only by virtue of the dogged determination of the tow truck driver that he found Agnes. Because, well, you know, over at the call center, and the young woman did a yeoman job trying to even get a wrecker out there. They had no idea. So it was stressful, to say the very least. Now, but anyway, thanks for getting us started. And thanks to Dr. Bill. Dr. Bill helped out as well, and that was tremendous and deeply touching. I understand he had a wonderful show again today, program, not show. This is not entertainment. A wonderful program today and yesterday. So make sure, if you're not downloading the podcast, you should be. If you're not listening live, you should be downloading the podcast. And, wow, just start at the beginning, because it is an absolutely invaluable, inestimable history lesson, what Dr. Bill is doing from 4 to 6 p.m. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of every week. So here on this Tuesday, the fourth day of June, we have on the table Shirley's monthly Wisconsin challenge, $100 on the table, looking for $100 in friends to match it. And thanks to Shirley for being willing to do that. Thank you very much. You know, we try to raise about $150 per show just to keep things going. And if Shirley's challenge is matched, then we will be $50 ahead, which would be wonderful. Yes, Sergi. Under the subject line, wow. Sergi says, you mean by it will be stripped, danger of leaving a broken down vehicle to get help ain't just an urban problem? Well, butter my ass and call me a biscuit. Fox News would lead one to believe that there's no crime whatsoever out in the country. Signed, Sergi, meth lab explosions don't happen much in cities, Kyle. butter my ass and call me a biscuit. I'll be saving that one for later. No, it oh, you don't... Clay, you ever seen the movie Wrong Turn? Yeah, I think Clay County. Oh, it's a. Let me tell you what they did one time for fun in Clay County. Like any county, rural or urban, as it were, Clay County has its problems. And people in Clay County have their problems. Many years ago now, as it turns out, though it feels to me only like yesterday, there was an older fella in Clay County, West Virginia. We will leave the names out of this. And he had what they like to call a drinking problem. So a couple of good old boys, and they admitted to it, followed the fella around for a little while until they found where he hid his bottle. And by bottle, we mean bottle of cheap wine, screw top wine. Your Mad Dog, your Wild Irish Rose, your Thunderbird, Boone's Farm, Annie Green Springs, what have you. They found where the old fella hid his wine bottle, and they spiked it with castor oil. Dang, they thought that was so funny. Hey, you know what? He's gonna drink that wine, and then he's gonna defecate all over the place. Won't it be hilarious? Well, he did, and he died. That's what passes for a good old time in Clay County, West Virginia. And consequently, you can understand my feelings of rather profound insecurity at the idea of my wife and daughter being thither with no way to go hither. And so Saturday got just a little bit frantic. Thanks, Jack. Thanks very much. Jack got us started this evening, going a quarter of the way toward meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. That means only 75 bucks more to be taken care of, and we'll be there. So thank you very much, Jack. But that was, yeah, I had an abundance of reasons for wanting my beloved spouse and daughter way the hell out of Clay County, West Virginia. As I'm sure you can understand. So anyway, that meant that yesterday was spent on the road, which meant that we missed Moran Monday. Damn. I mean, just damn. Because Moran Monday, frankly, had a whole lot to offer. A whole lot to offer. Yeah, News Ninja Gene and I both noticed this same story. Not that we're going to do Moran Monday this evening, but well, you know. It was there was just a real surfeit, if you will. A surfeit of Morans. Yeah, I had one in mind. I think I tweeted something like, "Oh, there he is. There he is." Yeah, thank you. thank you, News Ninja Gene, for noticing this one, and then I grabbed it as well. Sometimes you can't make up stupid like this. Sometimes you have to let stupid like this just sort of come along in its own good time. And it does. It does. I'll bet you didn't know, because I didn't take note of it. I was rather busy, otherwise engaged with the idea of making sure that my wife and daughter got out of Clay County okay, so I didn't make it to the celebration or nothing. But it was Confederate Memorial Day. Confederate Memorial Day. in Balmer, Maryland, this past Saturday. And that's where your great googly grandsons of Confederate veterans get together to honor their heritage. And just as sure as God made little green apples, and just as sure as if you eat too many God's little green apples, you'll get a bellyache and the turtle squirts. Well, somebody pointed a camera at one of these neo-Confederate goobs. In particular, a neo-Confederate goob by the name of Ray Brooks, a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. Why not just change Sons of Confederate Veterans to still proud of the treason our great grandpappies committed, but awfully damn glad they didn't get hanged for it, so that we can be here to celebrate it today? Now, that's kind of a mouthful, isn't it? So Ray Brooks gets in front of a cameraman who's running a camera for Balmer's Fox 45. There were apparently 600 people at the Confederate Memorial Day celebrations in Balmer. And once the camera was rolling, Ray Brooks let go of this gem. The soldiers of the South are equally American. So there's American soldiers buried on that hill, and they happen to be Confederates. We are descendants of Confederates, and there's nothing wrong with honoring our heritage. Look here, old Andy, look at my new haircut. It's all slickety in the back. Really? Really? Just as American. Even though they didn't want to be Americans anymore. They just happened to be Confederates. I'm telling you, we made a big mistake back in 1865. A giant mistake. And the best part of it, if you were to see the video as I did, and even the audio wouldn't help particularly in this regard, the idiot delivered himself of his opinion that Confederate soldiers are just as American as anybody, despite the fact that they committed treason against their own country, despite the fact that they no longer wanted to be a member of the country against whom they were in rebellion, delivered it without even so much as an iota of irony or sarcasm or anything else that should probably attend any such similar statement. But nonetheless, they're irony challenged. More hands. On the other hand, just because it happens in the south of the Mason-Dixie line, well, monopoly on the sort of Confederate stupid. Just running through a couple of basics here. If you want to keep up with politics, say, for instance, in the last great wilderness, the last frontier, you know, Alaska, the best blog doing that is the Mud Flats. And the Mud Flats reported that Alaska has a brand new vice chairman of the Alaska Republican Party. His name is Dr. David Eichler. No, not Eichmann, Eichler. And he's a dentist. I want to be a dentist. just like what was his name? Jeremy in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
I want to be a dentist.
Right. No, he's a dentist in Alaska. And at one point in time remarked that Native Americans who happened to live in Alaska could never be fully integrated into American society as what he called dignified citizens until they refused federal assistance. Apparently he has a bit of a genocidal streak because Eichler, damn it, once said, really, that Native Alaskan cultures will soon disappear, and rightfully so. And that sort of dovetails into another story we've got in the stack this evening, but we will save that for a few minutes because Sergi is with us, calling from Texas. Are you there, Sergi?
Yes, I am, Bob.
Okay, let's see if we can get some of this overmodulation sorted out. Agnes, give me a hand there. Go ahead, Sergi.
Coming through clear now?
Yeah, much better, much better.
All right. Well, first off, I have a question. What on earth is castor oil?
Oh, you don't know? Oh, dear God. I forget. I mean, I'm not trying to rub anything in, but you're younger. Castor oil is a vicious and pernicious laxative. It was the bane of children through the better part of the 20th century. Come here, honey, and get your castor oil. It is made from the castor berry. And it has a profound effect on the digestive tract of the human being, Sergi. And it's also the source of ricin. You know, the deadly poison ricin? Yeah.
So how on earth can we drink castor oil as a laxative without croaking?
It's a different formulation. In fact, it's something that's been known to humanity for a very, very long time because, among other things, the Egyptian, well, you know how beer is flavored with hops? You know, it gives it that little bitterness, that little floral note. Well, the ancient Egyptians used to flavor their beer with castor berries. I don't want any Egyptian beer.
I'm guessing they made a lot of trips to the toilet after drinking, right?
Or the hole in the sand or whatever happened to be handy.
I think it was the Greeks that had those toilets. I think it was the Egyptians. But yeah, that was just the first question. I had no idea what castor oil was.
Pray God you never found out.
Come to think of it, though, because when I was little, I used to watch a lot of those old Tom and Jerry cartoons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Come to think of it, I do remember that Tom did force feed Jerry castor oil in one of those episodes. So I've seen it before, but I just had no idea what exactly it was.
Yeah, that's the stuff. And if it's taken in sufficient quantities by someone of fragile constitution, it can kill, and it did.
And I'm guessing they weren't charged with anything?
No, that's the nice thing about a place like Clay County. It's very insular, and folks, if they have sufficient connections, are sort of taken care of.
Boys will be, you know, that whole boys will be boys thing, probably, as far as they just wanted to play a prank, and it got out of hand.
Well, and that was what they said. Well, we was just having a little fun. Hot damn, some fun.
Anyway, the main reason I called today, and it actually kind of ties into this whole theme about, you know, dirty secrets out in certain places, because it was the other week when I talked about Louis Gohmert's district.
Yes, yes, I remember well.
Yes, I have quite a lot of personal experience visiting some of those counties because of family-owned property over there having to be maintained and such like that over there in Marshall, Harrison County. And I have a fair amount of personal experience.
Okay.
I'll never forget, this was 2009. I'm just a couple of stories just to give you and everybody else just kind of a flavor of why Louis Gohmert keeps getting real, like just what goes on over there. This was 2009. Okay. We were in Marshall. Okay. At the property. We had to start mowing it. We had to find someone to mow it. And I was digging through the grass to pick out any litter that had blown through. And there was a newspaper that had been tossed up there. I guess the paper boy didn't pay attention to the fact nobody was in the house. Nobody was renting it at the time. Oh, Lord, I can move. Neighbors. Okay. Sorry about that, Bob.
No worries.
We have a neighbor here. We have a neighbor here who I think compensates for feelings of inadequacy by turning his stereo up to 100. But anyway, just the... on him several times because he'll pull in, like, Sunday is one of my sleeping in days. He'll pull in at 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning. Like, you don't disturb Sergey's sleep.
Best not.
But basically, one of the things I picked out of that grass was an old newspaper, and it was the Marshall News Messenger, their local paper. The front story, this was 2009, and I had to check the date to make sure it wasn't a decades-old paper, and sure enough, it was dated September 6th of 2009. Ku Klux Klan attack on local black church.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yes. I think I have that paper. I saved it because it's just like I just have to, you know, keep in mind. I have to keep reminding myself, this is why I'm never going to move down there. I'm never going to that part of the thing. I'm keeping that paper.
And that's the first the first district of Texas, right?
That is the first district of Texas, Louis Gohmert's district.
Oh, what horror story was I reading coming? Oh, I know what it. Yeah, I know what it was. A horror story coming out of Tyler just last week about some poor 2-year-old that was allowed to shoot herself.
Yes, that was Tyler. It is also Louis Gohmert's district.
Well, now we understand who votes for Louis, don't we?
Yes, and now this one, I wasn't alive at the time, but according to some family members, they went to Maine because that property's been in the family since 1906. And this was before I was born, but according to some family members, they went down in 1989, and for lunch, they've been working down there, and so they decided to go and try to get some lunch. They decided on the Dairy Queen over there on, I'm trying to remember what street it was in Marshall. It wasn't East End, but it was like, Marshall is a city. It's a small city, but it's, you know, it has a downtown. It's such, Dairy Queen is right outside of downtown. This was 1989. They walk in, and it's, you know, sit down, and they wait for one of the waitresses or waiters to come up and take their order. It never happened. They sat there for about an hour and a half. Never happened. Meanwhile, all the white patrons were getting served. within 5 minutes of walking in the door.
How about that?
And that was as late as 1989. And I don't go down there much anymore for obvious reasons, but I have heard that that's still a common occurrence down there. Is that, I mean, they won't have a sign up that says whites only, but because, you know, that would, you know, be too obvious. But they do just ignore you depending on some place you should go. That's your first district of Texas right there.
I saw that story, Sergey, about the little 2-year-old, and it just sickened me. The 2-year-old there in Tyler, Texas, wanted some chewing gum from Grandpa. And Grandpa was in the habit of leaving his Freedom Pertekin shooting arm laying out loaded on the nightstand, because you never know what's going to come along in the night there in Tyler.
A burglar zombie.
Right, exactly. And so so what happens is the child, having been told she could have some gum later, went toddling, as, you know, 2-year-olds often are not very good at taking no for an answer. And so she went toddling off to Grammy and Grampy's room, where somehow or another she decided to pick up the funny-looking thing and shot herself in the head. And, you know, these accidents just happen. Yeah. Jack in Shreveport wants to know, he says, Marshall, holy crap, I think Marshall is where there's a big Christmas light show. Maybe ask Sergey. Shaking my head. Is there a big Christmas light show there?
Marshall is home to a gigantic Christmas light show every Christmas season. Downtown Marshall gets lit up. Probably in more ways than one.
Who knows who gets served? I mean, does everybody get to look at the lights?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can walk around. I mean, now, of course,
I mean, it's after dark and everything, right? I mean,
yeah. Marshall, Tyler, and such, like, the cities over there, as much as you can call them cities, yeah, that's about the only place a black person can go out at night. If you go outside in the countryside of Smith, Tyler is Smith County, Marshall's Harrison, you know, the Grant County, Longview, yeah, you're not gonna last. That's just the way that works. That's like, give me the roughest neighborhood in Fort Worth any day over Deep East Texas.
Wow. Yeah, because, I mean, for instance, Clay County, West Virginia is not very much, well, this is not a terribly populous state in the first place, but Clay County is creepy. I mean,
I actually looked at it on Google Earth right after you mentioned it, and it's like the county seat looked like it was about 4x5 blocks.
That's about the size of it.
It's like, I mean, there's likely more people within 3 streets of me on either side than there are in that entire place.
Oh, I'd say that's highly likely. It borders another county called Roan that has a countywide population of about 15,000 human beings. So, right.
Meanwhile,
but the thing is, it's the concentration of mean people inside that small number.
Come to think of it, okay, because I actually have an internet friend that I met him on an online game. His name's Jonathan. And he lives in, I think you said the city is Fairmont.
Yeah, that's Marion County, West Virginia.
Yes, he lives up there. And he actually, come to think of it, about 2009 or 2010, he was saying that there's a county that he doesn't go to. I'm going to have to ask him. It may have been Clay County, because he was saying that the county scares him. And he's, he, like, looking at him, listening to him, you know, you would think he's your Fox News, you know, wacko. But, I mean, he's, you know, he's redneck through and through. He's actually one of the most progressive people I know. And he was saying that there's a county over there and went over there in the southern part of the state. He said it was, I remember he said it was the southern part of the state that he never goes to because it scares him. That's saying something.
Oh, you know, that could be anything. That could be Logan. That could be Mingo. That could be McDowell.
Logan, that's what it was. Logan County, yes.
Yeah, I don't voluntarily go to Logan County either. It's a frightening place. Yeah. Lots of fiends of coal down there, Sergi. You know, people who won't. You don't like coal, won't you freeze to death in the dark, you damn tree hugger?
Jonathan actually works in a coal mine himself, but he does recognize that coal won't exactly last forever. You know, he has enough of eyes that, yeah, we're going to eventually need to switch.
Yeah, it's, you know, I note there's a difference between an underground coal miner and a mountaintop removal worker too.
Yeah, he's underground. He goes underground.
Yeah. To a certain extent, I mean, I still have respect for people who do that because it's a dangerous, difficult job that you could not get me to do in a million years for any amount of money, especially the way that they're run now. But on the other hand, you know, these mountaintop removal guys, I don't have a lot of sympathy for them. No. Because we know now from the science that they're actually trading our lives for their paychecks, and nobody I know ever consented to that deal. But it's an absolute fact. Jack writing back in Jack in Shreveport regarding Marshall, Texas. Jesus God, I never knew that about Marshall. Although I guess it doesn't surprise me, son of a. I take it Jack used to like going to the Christmas light show.
Marshall's just right across the Louisiana border from Shreveport.
Okay. The geography is becoming clearer now.
Yes, you can get to, you can like. You can take the train or you can drive, but either way, you're from downtown Marshall to downtown Shreveport in, you know, a matter of maybe an hour.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
So it's literally Harrison County borders Louisiana on one side. Then you cross, you go and be before you get to Shreveport. Shreveport is where everybody in Texas, in Northeast Texas, goes to gamble because, you know, casinos are still
in. Is that around over around Bossier City?
Yes.
Okay, because Bossier City used to be what? Babylon on the Red River?
Shreveport and Bossier City, they're actually border each other. They're right in the same metro area.
Okay.
But I just wanted to call in and just share a couple of those stories, talk about his district some, because there's a reason why he keeps getting sent to Washington, and it's because the culture down in that part of the state.
Well, I didn't know, Sergi, that you could that effectively gerrymander stupid into one district.
To be honest, though, it's not that hard to gerrymander stupid in the state of Texas, because once you get out of the suburbs, you are in deep and stupid. You know.
Yeah, there was an album once. I forget who the artist was, but it was the name of the album was Knee Deep in the Hoopla. Knee Deep in the Stupid.
That is basically what it is. Once, like, there's several oases of reason in this state. You got Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, Brownsville, and El Paso. Leave any of those cities, you're in, you know, 1950, much.
I'm looking forward to a potential trip down that way next fall. I know I'm going to get to finally meet a lot of wonderful people. And I can't pretend that anybody's got any higher concentration than anybody else because, well, you know, I live in West Virginia. We elect people like Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore Capito and Earl Ray Tomlin and, you know, fools. But Louis Gohmert, he's in serious competition. Without a doubt.
Oh, yes. At least one of his competitors is going to be gone soon. You know, Bachman. I have a friend named Corey. He calls her Barkman.
Oh. <At least. laughs> Yeah, as in at the moon?
Yes. Precisely, Barkman. But are you seriously going to come down to Texas?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been talking some with Dr. Allen in Waco, and we're trying to I hope I'm not letting anything out of the bag, but we're going to try to get me down there to talk a little bit about mountaintop removal down at maybe down at Baylor a little bit or some such.
Oh, well, I mean, I definitely would love to see you live if I could. I could go down there and see you live.
Well, I'm hoping it works out, and I'll certainly mention it at greater length if it does. But I've never been to Texas in my life. So it would be a real cultural event for me.
Oh, Texas is it's like physically it's a very beautiful place. It's just that a lot of the people are cuckoo.
But it hasn't always been that way. That cuckoo was co-opted, I think, and sort of caused to flourish. But again, Sergi, nobody's got a lock on it. I'm looking here at a story. From, of course, Alabamistan, where a young high school graduate, Chelsea Raymer, was denied her high school diploma, and she's being fined $1,000. You know why? Because in graduation, she wore a feather to denote her Native American heritage.
Oh, I say. Even Texas isn't bad. Even most of Texas ain't that bad. And it's not from The Onion. It's a real story.
No, that's a real story. A real story. It happened May the 23rd. She said, about 2 months ago, me and the other Indian seniors from the graduating class asked our headmaster if we could wear the feathers on our caps, and she told us no, and that if we did, she would pull us off the field. But she attended, and she walked in the ceremony, and there was no big deal. And according to Indian Country Today, they then withheld the state of Alabama withheld the diploma, and is charging her $1,000. I don't, you know, what, desecration of mortarboard? I never heard of such a thing.
That's one of those stories where I just have to breathe out slowly.
Well, right. I mean,
breathe out slowly.
What is it about the states that begin with AL? You got the Republicans in Alaska. Their vice chairman of the Republican Party now says that he'll be happy when all the native peoples are extinct from Alaska. And now you got this in Alabama. I mean, there was a full-on genocide in the southeastern United States even before the Trail of Tears. I mean, there's a heart-rending history there, and the fact this Chelsea Raymer is apparently a Porch, P-O-A-R-C-H, a member of the Porch Band, and they're pretty scant and really had to struggle to get recognition at all. And, you know, really? $1,000 over a feather on a mortarboard? Wowzer. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there seems to be just something. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. I think what's happening is that you have a lot of white people who see the writing on the wall, I think, and they see that going to be majority minority and think, well, what is it now? 2020, 2015 maybe now? Sometime really soon, and they're going into full-on panic mode, I think.
I think you're right, and every day is just it's another litany of weirdness, considering just, you know, like the stories we've had here. Sergio, it's awful good to hear from you. I hope we'll talk again soon, and you have yourself a good evening.
You too. Thanks for taking the call.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure, Sergio. Anytime. Sergio calling from the general Fort Worth area. Edward in Dallas is on the line. Hey, Edward.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. I talked to Agnes earlier, and we got on castor oil, and she mentioned something I'd forgotten from my youth, something called black draught.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, yes. An instrument from hell. It was invented by the devil himself.
And all the time I thought that was blackjack and bourbon.
No, no. Oh, my. Well, you were talking about the interstates. I hate the interstates. Well, they're great to get from A to B, but you don't see anything. And plus, sometimes this I-35 out here, I call a death trap. I try to stay off of it as often as I can.
Well, and that's the thing that happens for me. I-64 from Beckley to roughly Lexington, Virginia, is no big deal.
Yeah.
But I-81 is a daggum racetrack that is semi-tractor trailers, probably being admirably driven, but, you know, nonetheless, a little intimidating. And it's just wall-to-wall. The highway is carrying more than it's designed to carry.
You're telling me.
So in this instance, I had a chance to get off the road and use some two-lane and just had a nice drive.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, we used to take these driving vacations, and my daddy had I think it was a 1937 DeSoto, because during the war you couldn't get any cars, and this was after the war, and we'd take. Still driving this old DeSoto, went just perked along for a long time, and we were going through the Smoky Mountains, and you know, and there were no interstates in those days, and they had all these hairpin curves. I think there was one curve there, you went through either three or four different states on one curve.
Mercy.
Yeah, it was. I think it was. Oh, Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia, and maybe North Carolina. It was right up there where they all went together. So.
Right. I know where you're talking about.
Yeah. Anyway, we were driving along. It was getting dark and looking for a motel. We were up in the mountains and on these hairpin curves. And then for some strange reason, the car decided that every time you put on the brakes, the lights would go out, the headlights. Now, that was quite amusing.
Oh, mercy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, finally, we got into Cherokee, North Carolina, and got a cabin. Those days, they had those cabins, you know. And I got to turn my oven off there. Thank you. I'm baking a potato. Actually, two. Anyhow, we got into there, and the next day there in Cherokee, this fellow there at the garage fixed it, and so we were all right after that. But that was sort of a rather unusual experience.
Oh, I'll say. And you know, those roads still exist. You just have to want to be on them. I think about something like the Blue Ridge Parkway and Skyline Drive, and you know, it can wind pretty good. But what a beautiful drive! And we had a lovely drive yesterday, just staying off the interstate. And the funny thing, one of the little U.S. highways we were on paralleled I-81, so it wasn't like we were particularly out of the way.
Well, it's been a long time since I've been up there, but it was wonderful as I remember it. Oh, and another thing, you were talking about your family and the well and drinking the cold, wonderful water out of the pitcher, or not the pitcher, but the ladle.
Yeah, out of the dipper, yeah.
Dipper, yeah, okay. Well, I want to tell you, being there from the coast, we had different dippers, so to speak. We used conch shells.
Conch shells? No kidding.
No kidding. And believe it or not, Mother Nature has been kind to us down there. There is a right-handed conch shell and a left-handed conch shell. Don't tell me why, but there is.
I never pondered the possibility that there might be, but you know what? Further proof of the delight that is the natural world. And I imagine you can probably dip it down there and tip it up, and it'll pour right out the spout, right?
Well, you didn't pour it out of the spout. You just drank out of the side of it, the large side, you know.
Yeah.
It held it by the spout, and then that's where the conch's foot went. Out of small part. You just held it by that and dipped it in, and that was it. So if you were right-handed, you used the right-handed one. If you were left-handed, you used the left-handed one.
I'll be darned.
Yep. Believe it or not.
Well, you know, it's got that smooth sort of mother-of-pearl interior surface. Once you get the conkiness out of it, I imagine imagine it works quite well.
Let me tell you, I love conch chowder. The last time I was at the Sanitary Fish Market in Morehead City, North Carolina, I had conch chowder.
Oh, you're killing me here. I've had conch chowder a couple of times, and it is some kind of delicious.
Yep, it sure is, and I just love it. Well, anyway, I'm through. Somebody else can talk for a while, but I just want to call you and tell you that I remember castor oil, and your lovely wife reminded me of black draught.
I never experienced the stuff, Edward, but you know what? To hear Agnes tell the tale, I'm glad I didn't.
You are very lucky.
Well, apparently my mother used to dose my older sister, and she's considerably older than me.
Mm-hmm.
She would dose her with the castor oil, or maybe it was my grandmother, but had gotten over the habit by the time that I came along. And I don't know that I ever even tasted the stuff. But Lord, the horror stories I've been told by those who did was more than sufficient to the task.
Well, I'll tell you what that was. My grandmother was the same way, and I got that stuff given to me in the spring. It was spring cleaning. I mean, everything in the house came out, the mattresses and the springs and everything, the bedsteads and clean. I mean, and my grandmother believed that you needed to be cleaned out, too.
Dear Jesus.
You're telling me. Oh, God, I hated the thought of it. And
well, my sister tells me she would run from it and would, given the choice, prefer the whipping.
Well, I just went ahead and took it because I knew my grandma thought that was the thing that I should do, and it was spring cleaning, and I just will be cleaned out, too. And let me tell you, that stuff cleaned you out. Wow.
Ugh.
I don't think you can even buy it anymore. I hope not.
I don't know. I don't know if you can. I don't know if you can or not. At one time, it existed in a sort of milded down, if you can say that about the stuff, version called Fletcher's Castoria.
Oh my God, I had that too. But that tasted good. Black draw didn't even taste good. Neither did castor oil. Ooh.
Yeah, both of which just make I can feel little hairs standing up on the back of my neck.
The only thing I can say about those is to go into French and say, quel horreur.
Mais oui.
Or.
Yeah.
Well, you take care, and I think I've taken enough of your time with my silliness.
Oh, not silly at all, but I'll, you know what, next time I see somebody with a well bucket, I'll be thinking of them conch shells.
Yep. I don't know whether you would find anybody down there in eastern North Carolina that still remembers that, but I do.
I'll be darned. Thank you, Edward. You have a wonderful evening.
You do, too, and I hope you do come to Texas and be in Waco, but don't ever have sex standing up there. Because they'll think you're dancing.
Lest anybody think you're dancing. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Take care.
All right. Bye, Edward.
Bye.
Our good buddy, Edward, and we will go on to Jim. You there, Jim?
Is that the home of the Waco kid?
I reckon.
It's played by Gene Wilder in Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, Bart. No. Sheriff Bart was,
he was the Waco kid.
Yeah, he was the Waco kid.
Mm-hmm. They gave up his profession because some 6-year-old shot him in the ass. But your call is certainly right about Texas. There are certain enclaves that you really don't, I won't use the term enclave. The enclaves refer to the civilized part, but in the hinterlands, you certainly don't want to be caught there after dark.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Mm-mm. As you've aptly stated about certain parts of your native state, that's for damn sure.
Listen, and I'm not kidding, Jim. It took the insurance company with their roadside assistance plan, it was a solid 2.5 hours, a wrecker getting to her, or getting to them. And I was about halfway freaked out the whole time because Clay County, West Virginia, you just don't know what's coming next.
Well, there's some very angry and very mean people there who don't like any type of incursions by any type of stranger whatsoever.
Yeah, if we wanted strangers passing through here, we'd have us a highway. What you doing on Route 16?
Well, I mean, that's where these people are. If you go near their house, then you better make a noise or whatever, because somebody's going to come out and they're going to be pumping you full of lead.
Well, this was a stand your ground state before stand your ground was cool.
Well,
I mean, that's not a joke. What was it, back in the early 80s, that it was declared that one had the right to openly and notoriously carry the firearm of one's choice anywhere one went in West Virginia?
Uh-huh.
And the NRA didn't even have to work on it here. We just figured that's how it ought to be.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, hell, they've got something called Hillbilly Blood that's on television about these two guys who go around and they do all types of things in order to make money or to trade for action, that type of thing. And they have one episode in which they actually went into a rattlesnake's den under a rock and brought back rattlesnakes for a church.
You mean for the sacraments?
Well, for whatever they use them for.
Oh, yeah, it's a sacrament when you take up the serpent.
Oh, is that what they call it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Of course, there's a little. There's a little bit of chicanery involved too. If you keep them nice and cold in a cooler in the refrigerator, you can handle them till hell freezes over. What you do is you wait till they get warmed up real good before you pass it to the sinner that you hate.
Oh, so that's the M.O., huh?
Yeah, yeah. And interestingly, because it's not that too awfully far from where you live when you're not vacationing up in P-Town. You know, we've got a new Boy Scout camp over in Fayette County, not too awfully far from Mount Hope. Well, then this is just scuttlebutt, but, you know, usually with scuttlebutt, there's some element of truth to it. I am hearing that is the snakiest place on God's green earth, that they're pulling rattlesnakes out of that Boy Scout camp for all they're worth. I mean, they're actively hunting them now because there's so many of them.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. I mean, there's some very huge diamondback rattlers in that area.
And you got to figure that if you've got 10,000 little human beings and 10,000 rattlesnakes on a limited parcel of property, sooner or later they're going to meet up with one another.
Well, I've been told the story that a guy hit one and the snake actually bit his tire and blew it.
No, I heard a couple of stories over the weekend about, you know, 12 and footers and 14 footers.
Left him there. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
No, I've heard stories about 12 and 14 footers coming out of that Boy Scout campsite.
Yeah, they're huge. They're very large and very deadly. And they're extremely.
And I don't think there's a rattlesnake hunting merit badge, is there?
No, I don't think so. At least it was when I was a scout. As a matter of fact, we were taught to avoid them and to watch where you step so you didn't, when you, for example, cross over a log, you didn't step on a snake that was sunning himself there and stuff like that.
Yeah, a healthy admiration and respect for nature.
Well, you know, by and large, snakes are not very aggressive. There are some who are. And, of course, you step on one, you've got a problem. But if, you know, when they hear you coming, they're going to try to get away. Most of them will, with the exception of one, and that's water moccasin. And they are an extremely,
Aggressive,
and also they are very intuitive as far as being near some other type of living human being. They are. I mean, my God, those things are just horrible. And they can bite you in the water. Now, those are native to the South Carolina.
No, they can not only bite you in the water, they can bite you in the leg, they can bite you in the butt, they can bite you in the arm, they can bite you, yeah, indeed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And persistent.
And, you know, oddly enough, they're not supposed to be in West Virginia, but I found out, and again, it's one of those chilling moments. Yeah, I found out over the weekend that, yes, they are, because when we finally got over to Exchange Daughters over in Roane County, our second eldest switched out with our youngest to help take care of the little grandbabies over there. There's a little creek that runs down through their backyard down the hill, and my son-in-law was telling me, he said, "Oh yeah, I've killed a bunch of water moccasins out of that creek." And I got it's like Edward said, you know, quelle horreur. Just thinking about the little ones down there playing. And he said, No, I don't. He said, "I won't even let them get down there before I go through and recon the whole place and make sure none of the nasty little things are there."
They actually have nests.
Yes, they do.
And
they like to nest under banks, you know, by creeks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, when I was a young man, my father thought it would be a good idea for me to get a job with the highway department as a robin with a bush axe. And I'm going to tell you, I killed many a water box with that bush axe, going through those swamps in wader boots, doing lines for surveyors. Now, you talk about a job that will make you butch, that will.
I reckon.
And something else that will make you butch, too, is that stuff you were talking about, castor oil.
Oh, mercy, yes. Well, I don't know if it'll make you butch, but it'll make you sick.
Well,
it'll make you feel very much rooted to one general locality for a considerable amount of time.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know which is worse, that or Epsom salt. That's another one right there. I don't know if you ever heard of people using magnesium sulfate.
Oh, sure, yeah, and that's still used for preparations like in advance of colonoscopies and the like. Nasty.
Very nasty. As a matter of fact, there's a very good book I sent to you by email. It's called The Good Soldier Spike.
Yes.
About an Austrian recruit, and they used what they term for torture and also disciplinary reasons as a clyster, in which people were forced to ingest quantities of castor oil.
Ugh.
And that was one of the means of torture and discipline in the Austrian army. It makes a good read. I haven't read it in a long, long time.
Lord, I've just been sent a photograph of a whole mess of water moccasins. Ugh. I don't know if I'll sleep tonight.
Well, they're quite lovely. I've seen them in their habitat, and I guarantee you one thing. If you can move out of there, you better.
Yeah, I just like, well, one of the most horrifying scenes in either film or literature is out of Larry McMurtry's Lonesome Dove. When they go to cross the Red River and the one young fella gets basically bitten to death when he gets tied up in a whole mess of water moccasins. Obviously, it stayed with me.
Oh, I can't think of anything worse except falling into a pool of lampreys. Remember, in Roman history, there was a guy who broke a glass, and his master threatened to throw him into a pool of those man-eating lampreys.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also as one of the killing mechanisms in this TV series called The Borgias.
Oh, sure, so
So I guess people just weren't limited to a little poison in your wine at midnight. They just might throw you into a pool of those. One thing I wanted to mention is last night on Bill Moyers, there was an Indian gentleman. He's a poet, and I can't remember his name, but he was talking about Abraham Lincoln. And he didn't have a whole lot of use for Lincoln, because there was some type of problem when Lincoln was president somewhere in the Northwest, in which like 600 and some odd Sioux were to be hanged by the neck until dead.
Yes,
under Lincoln's signature.
That was Minnesota.
Yeah. And, of course, only 38 were hanged or whatever, but that was 38 too many. But this man really despised Lincoln and had no use for him as anything whatsoever.
Well, Lincoln is, as was the case with most of our presidents, especially the ones with some dynamic or dynamism or determination or ambition about them, very much when he chose to be an enigmatic man. We like to think that because of his position on slavery in the Union that he was somehow ahead of his time, but he wasn't. He was a product of his bigotries just as anybody else was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think as close as he ever claimed to it was the extension of slavery into certain territories, and would have been content to have allowed the South to have kept their slaves. So, I mean, you know, that was his position on that particular issue. But, you know, we all have to have our idols, and we all have to have our own hagiography when it surrounds certain leaders and things of that nature. So it fell upon his shoulders, I guess, that he finally, due to military necessity, finally drafted the Emancipation Proclamation, you know?
Well, I think it was more than military necessity, but
it definitely was part of it.
Sure. I mean, when you, like I said, you know, since we're up here in D.C., you go over onto U Street and you see the African-American Civil War Monument and you see 250,000 names carved onto plaques that, you know, in tiny types print.
Well, where's that? The U Street Cardozo stop?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there.
But there are these steel or aluminum, whatever, plaques with every name of every African-American who served in the Civil War, and it comes to about 250,000. And that's a great way to swell your ranks with people who had a bona fide reason for being in that struggle, that war.
Well, of course, and it was designed to disrupt structure behind the Confederate lines and in the border states particularly. I mean, it didn't apply to all southern states, but I think just the border states, if I'm not mistaken. The Emancipation Proclamation was not totally inclusive of the entire South.
Oh, no. It only included the states in rebellion. It didn't touch Kentucky. It didn't touch Maryland. It didn't touch Missouri.
Well, I think.
But it was sufficient cause to encourage a massive enlistment.
Well, that it certainly did. But nonetheless, you know, those states were basically slave states, were they not?
Which, Kentucky and Maryland and Missouri?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, they were, but they refused to join the Confederacy. And therefore, the Emancipation Proclamation did not apply to them, because it was specifically stated to apply only to the states in open rebellion. And open rebellion was defined as secession.
Hmm. Well, it had the same operative effect because these were border states in which they weren't de facto in rebellion against the Union, but still there were a lot of sympathizers there.
Oh, certainly, but the government never actively passed an ordinance of secession, you know, like Mississippi or South Carolina or Alabama or Virginia did.
Right. And just going to the subject of your highways and things like that, there are some nice roads up there.
Lovely ones. The one I was talking about that runs parallel to 81, we picked it up out of Harrisonburg, and that's U.S. Highway 11. And it's very nicely maintained. It's two-lane road. Not particularly congested, and for a history freak like me, it's one historical marker after another. And Ferg was sitting there looking them up on the phone as we went, looking up the historical markers and because the internet now, you can find the text of the historical markers even though you've blown past them. And there's just there's tons of history there.
Well, I can remember when I had to drive to D.C. before moving there, rather than go I-95, which is the total, God, that's one of the worst stretches of road in the world. I don't know if you've ever driven I-95.
I have. Yeah.
I take 77 into 81, 81 into 66.
Yeah, well, we generally go 64 to 81 and 81 to 66, but I've grown quite tired of I-81. Because it's a racetrack and it gets tiresome.
Well, that's about all I have to say, other than if you find some black draught or black drafts, as I've heard it called, well, I don't know. You better maybe pass it on to some of your.
Well, Agnes, the boss, tells me you can still buy it, but I have no interest in finding that. None whatsoever.
Well, okay. Well, you have a good evening.
All right. You take care, Jim. Have a good evening.
Yeah.
Bye now. Yeah, D-R-A, yeah, Black Draft, Black Draught, D-R-A-U-G-H-T, and all you can really say is, yeah. Let's keep it going. Is Andy still with us, Agnes?
Hello.
Hey, Andy, what's up? Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It has been a while. How you doing?
All right. I've been out of commission for a while. I was studying for an exam.
Oh, joy.
I just had it on Saturday. So I thought I'd give it a the old college try and try to immerse myself and not get sidetracked with other things. So I had to just listen via podcast.
Yeah, well, I
prime time here.
Yeah, well, I see your notes from time to time, and I figured you were listening in podcast for some reason or another. But first off, do you know how you did on the exam?
I won't find out till September.
Jesus, this is the 21st century. What are they doing?
Well, half of it's essay.
Oh, okay.
The test is very difficult. Exam, sometimes only 40% of the people around the world that take it pass it. It's given one day a year, and that's it. You got to sit that one day. And there's three levels to it. I passed the first two, and I can't, for some reason, pass the third one. Of course, I had things that happened to me in between that time, like I got sick, and that'll kind of mess up your comprehension.
Oh, sure.
Speed. And so I tried this, but I don't know. I just don't know how to quit. I've come so close to passing this, and it would be such a nice thing to have because so few people. There's only like 100 to 150,000 people around the world that have this certificate.
Wow. Yeah, that beats the hell out of the bar exam.
Yeah. And I just can't seem to do it. But half of it's essay. So on essays, you can't really grade it with a machine, you know, put it through a...
No, that explains the September part, because somebody's got to sit and read and, yeah.
Right, and there's a lot of... they do give you some leeway as far as the way the answers go. So half it's a six-hour exam, and three hours of it is an essay, so... In order to do that, they have a real elaborate process they do as far as grading it. Like they do like three rounds they get together in a place in Charlotte. It's called a Chartered Financial Analyst. They get together in Charlottesville, Virginia, and they do like three rounds of going through it, and they kind of amass the answers that they have, and then they do the final grade after the third round. So it's an elaborate
process. Oh, it sounds positively Byzantine.
Yeah, well, when you do essays, you can't use a scanning machine to get your answers for the essays. So
no, and while optical scanners are fine for ACT tests and stuff, no, they're not worth a damn with an essay.
Right, but half the exam is multiple choice, so that part is easy for them to do. But the other half is a major operation of debate and discussion. You wouldn't believe how much material you have to cover, and a lot of it's very, very technical material. You know, they get into the inner workings of derivative contracts and how they operate and so forth. I mean, it can get pretty elaborate stuff on swaps and credit default swaps and all kind of hedging strategies, among other all kind of economic stuff, portfolio management stuff. It's pretty.
Well, it doesn't surprise me that you would be after something like that because your degree, your level of expertise in those issues is formidable, based upon our years of conversation.
Yeah, I should have passed it 10 years ago. I think, like I said, I think if I hadn't gotten sick, it would have I would have knocked it off, but. Excuse. Sun was in my eyes, man. Anyway,
the sun was in my eyes.
No, matter of fact, it's kind of funny. My eyes are going, and during the exam, the exam was in the Hilton Hotel. They had a huge ballroom, and I went to one of the proctors. I go, man, can you turn off the lights a little bit? And she, about 15 minutes later, she came back to me. She goes, sir, we have the lights on maximum.
Oh, yeah, and those ballrooms can problems. Be like that.
Yeah, I have problems. My eyes just aren't that great. You know, they've taken a toll, too. And I'll be damned, I was having trouble just reading the goddamn text. You know, it was hard enough just doing that as far as another, I need glasses, man. I need glasses. Anyway. Yeah, a lot of stuff's happened since the last time I talked to you. One thing I wanted to bring up. Go ahead.
No. I was gonna say a lot has indeed, and I was thinking of you earlier today when I was reading about this bipartisan bill that's been filed in the Senate. The offspring of a of an intellectual union between, of all people, David Vitter and Sherrod Brown, as a sort of panacea for Dodd-Frank.
Right. I think they're on the right track with that. I'm surprised David Vitter, you know, the diaper Dave.
Yeah.
Might actually do something good. My understanding is that they are on the track to try to bring back kind of a limited Glass-Steagall, where they do break up some companies and they have a side. They set up a size limit. I don't know if it's going to be by assets or by deposits, but I think they are working on some kind of size limit.
Well, if I and I can get lost in the weeds really easily on this, Andy, but if I understand it correctly, they're actually this bill, and I can't remember what its name is all of a sudden, but it would make the big banks. Or it would stop the big banks from being able to do some of the phony, baloney, funny business they do in terms of what they keep off the books. And it would require that their reserves be basically super liquid.
Their capitalization would probably have to have stricter requirements as far as what kind of assets they hold. So if they do need to liquidate, meaning they have to sell them, and they call it monetization, to create cash, it would be easy to do. Meaning, you hold treasuries, government treasuries, which are usually very liquid and easy to sell, instead of holding like mortgage-backed securities or some kind of corporate bond or maybe bonds in Greece or Spain or something stupid like that, like a John Corzine would do. You keep something that's relatively safe, like U.S. treasuries, which, according to Bill Gross, who I just heard him say today in his PIMCO fund, the safest investment on the face of the earth is U.S. Treasury. And it's true. That's why people flock to Treasuries, and that's why the interest rates are so low.
Right, and despite the best efforts of the teabaggers and the Republican Party to make them no longer what they are.
Right, that's their goal. But the Republicans have no idea that still the U.S. dollar is the major trading currency in the world. Of course, some countries like Iran and Iraq would probably like to change that because of the oil connection to dollars and oil. But still, the dollar is a very, very strong world reserve currency, and people want it in high demand. That means our treasuries are in high demand. So, it's kind of, and a lot of people have a lot of vested interest in keeping our treasuries strong and viable, like the Chinese. I mean, one thing you can say about the Chinese, yeah, they have a lot of investments in the Japanese, a lot of investments in our treasuries. So they've hung their shirt out to dry. They've got skin in the game. They don't want to see us go under or their investment.
Yeah, because they go with us.
Right.
And well, even the Chinese national currency is tied to one degree or another to the valuation of the dollar, right?
Well, to renminbi or the yuan. It used to be tied to the dollar as far as what's called a currency peg, but now there's a basket of currencies. And I think the dollar might be in that basket. But the renminbi or the yuan is not a free trading. It has a float, they call it, has a float currency. It's still pegged, and it's pegged to a basket. It used to be just pegged to the dollar, I believe, at one time, but that's no longer the case. But still, it's wrong. I mean, you talk about this free trade and free trade agreements and the world WTO and all this baloney. No, we're at an unfair advantage because they have a goddamn currency peg. Their currency stays stable, where ours moves all over the face of the effing map and is usually too strong for for our manufacturing to be any good where their stays way undervalued. So it's a joke. As most things are a joke for the working class, that's another joke, you know, as far as being screwed. And companies like the high-tech companies here just taking advantage of a totalitarian regime that the workers have absolutely no rights, and Foxconn, and you jump out the roof of your building instead of going to your next session of work or whatever.
Right, and the remedy to that's to put up nets, not make the workplace any better.
Let's put up nets and catch those bastards as they jump off, yeah. We won't change the conditions. We'll just put up the nets. But anyway, getting back to Vitter and Sherrod Brown, yeah, that'd be nice. If you guys got my call with Sherrod Brown, just when you, and I think you might have talked about this, that GMO amendment that Bernie Sanders had.
Yeah.
Sherrod Brown, he was on the wrong side of that. I noticed his name.
Well, there were a boatload of Democrats on the wrong side of that.
God damn, I made some phone calls, man, after I saw that come up, because I put my skin in getting a lot of signatures to get that on the ballot here, and worked hard to, you know, we came within 1%, the final tally of being outspent like 5-6 to 1, $48 million just to get GMO labeling. You know, the states can do, all the amendment was to allow GMO labeling in the states. And right, we only got 27 votes for it in the Senate. One was a Republican and the other 26 were Democrats. And that means there's about 25 Democrats who went again. And Elizabeth Warren was one of them. Who
got it wrong.
GMO label. I couldn't believe it. Sherrod Brown, you know, was another one that we did. Al Franken was another one. Jesus, these guys are supposed to be a Tammy Baldwin. And I've given money to them. I called them up. You think I'll ever give a dime to you? You call yourself a progressive? What kind of baloney is that, voting against GMO labeling? And then you got that other one you brought up, too, which just blew my mind, with the Farm Bill, the Gillibrand amendment. I think it was 931, if I'm not mistaken, to keep $4 billion worth of funding for food stamps.
Yeah.
And you could only get 26 Democrats to vote for that, and the rest of the Democrats voted with the Republicans to not strike it. She wanted to strike the amendment to do away with the food stamp, you know, extra $4 billion spending. And then there were a host of, I think Sherrod, I'm not so sure, I'm sure Brown might have been on the right side of that one, but God, what is up with that? Why can't the Democrats work in, well, where's the leadership here? You know, to go into a vote and only get half the Democrats to vote for it in very progressive issues just blows my mind. Anyway.
Well, and again, you know, it's kind of like the austerity cuts in regard to people's grandmas and people's mamas and daddies and 4-year-olds that want to go to Head Start. You know, there's never going to be a news story on Eyewitness whatever about you know, that will work into the whole if it leads it bleeds philosophy of TV news, so they know they can get away with it. They can cut, sure, what the hell, we can cut $4 billion out of food stamps because the people who need food stamps aren't a constituency, Andy.
Right.
And they're not somebody that there's any particular value in standing up for. Except for a fairly small handful of progressive / liberal politicians, of whom there are far too damn few.
Right. And until the people get out in the streets like they're doing in Turkey, the government and the news media won't take notice, you know, until...
Well, the Turkey situation is absolutely fascinating to me.
Somebody gets killed.
I mean, the Turkey situation is fascinating, Andy, because it didn't even start out as some particularly political protest. It was just, hey, don't turn this little last bit of green space or little last bit of the public commons in Istanbul, don't turn it into a damned shopping mall.
Absolutely. A bunch of tree huggers hanging in the trees.
Yeah. But then the government comes along with dadgum tear gas grenades and acts like it's the, you know, Arab Spring or something. And suddenly people realize this is kind of nasty.
Right. They were doing a Scotty Olsen. You know who Scotty is?
Yeah.
He does Excuse me? You know who Scott Olsen?
Yes.
Remember, right, the Iraq war vet. He's here. He does two tours of Iraq. He's a Marine. He survives that. No injuries, no nothing, clean, comes back.
And winds
clean.
Up taking a flashbang grenade in the head in San Francisco.
Absolutely. Right, in Oakland, actually.
Right,
in Oakland.
Right.
At the demonstration, just behind the barriers, behind where the demonstrators actually were, you know, just doing some shouting and getting it on, supporting his fellow brothers and sisters there, trying to do a little demonstrating. And he gets a canister to the head, right? And fucking crushes his skull. Beautiful. But that's what they were doing to the demonstrators in that park.
Yeah.
And these are just, they said this guy, you know, Erdogan is a total neoliberal. These were neoliberal policies. And like you said, to just strip that park out of there and give it over to private hands. Put them all up. Beautiful. There were 600 trees involved. This isn't a small park. I mean, this is a
no, but it is about the only green space left in Istanbul.
Right. But getting back to, you know, the people that are on the food stamps doing something, that's what we need. That's the only time people take notice, man, is when people get out in the streets and start, you know, hindering the 1% from correcting their greedy mammon out there. If they're encumbered in some way or made uncomfortable, then something will happen. Something will be done to stop their discomfort. Anyway. Another thing I wanted to bring up that I had in my notes that I put in, a guy that really gets into my craw, Max Baucus.
Yes.
But he was on the wrong side of both of those, the GMO and the issue with the food stamps, cutting food stamps. They had an article on him in the New York Times back in January I wanted to bring up a long time, but never got a chance. It's about footnote Big Senate gift to drug makers, about his connections with Amgen. He's gotten like $67,750 from Amgen like in the last decade or something like that. And there's this kidney drug called Sensipar, kidney dialysis patients. And they wanted it to go off the private scheme to a generic, I believe, which would have saved Medicare $500 million in, I think just a two-year window. The savings would be $500 million. The Sensipar was able to go off of the, private copyright route, the trademark route over to, you know, the generic route. And he extended the copyright on that, and that would cost $500 million more to Medicare. You wonder why Medicare and our drug prices are so high. Thank Max Baucus. Coming cheap. He's bought for $67,000 from Amgen, and the payback is, the correct word is patent, right?
I didn't know if it was trademark, patent, or,
This is a patent. He's extending the patent on Sensipar. And he did that. And here again, where do you hear this? It wasn't the New York Times. But freaking, somebody take this MF to task. You wonder why Medicare is so expensive and our drug costs. Well, you got son of a bitches like Max Baucus who just gives these drug companies. I can tell you a story, too. I'm on this drug that I have to take, right? And for 90 tablets, it was costing me like $347 for 90
days
up until January. This has gone on for years, right? $347 for 90 tablets for years. Now it's gone generic. What do you think the new price is for the same 90 tablets now?
$62.50.
Close. $33.
Ah.
From the last time I bought it, so the most recent time prior to that, it was $347. Now it's $33 going generic. But it's still made by the same company. It's a generic for some reason, for some, you know, deal that they have.
The whole thing is a rigged game. There was actually there was actually a pretty good article. You mentioned the New York Times. There was actually a pretty good article in the New York Times about the cost of health care in the last couple of days. I read it. And it used as sort of a benchmark the colonoscopy. And
which should be a pretty routine test. They've been around for a long time, right?
Yeah, but it points out that colonoscopies are used when in fact there are other ways of going about it that aren't nearly as expensive and are pretty much equally effective. You know, the one difference being that if you're in the middle of a colonoscopy and they run into a polyp, they can take the polyp out. But that's not, you know, it's not always, not every colonoscopy yields up a polyp to be removed. And then what happens is, I mean, it's not unusual to see an insurance company build $5,000 for a colonoscopy because there's got to be the doctor's, the gastroenterologist's fee, the anesthesiologist's fee, and then because they've moved to using outpatient surgery centers and that kind of thing, there's a facilities access fee. It is not the medicine itself that is driving our system completely around the band, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the avarice. It's the greed.
Well, I saw another article as well where the most expensive hospital in the country charges the most. I don't know. I forget what it was, 5 or 10 times what the average Medicare costs are at this hospital. Do you know where that is?
No.
It's in Bayonne, New Jersey. And do you know why it's so expensive there? It was actually taken over by a private equity firm. And they're doing their darndest to keep prices high at this small hospital that's in Bayonne, New Jersey, run down old middle-class manufacturing area, kind of neighborhood. Private equity firm takes over the hospital, and they're just trying to make a profit, and they've jacked up the prices. And also, according to this article, 5 of the 9 most expensive hospitals in the country, you know, outpacing Medicare costs 5 to 10 times the average Medicare cost, is in California. And these are private, for-profit. I know you had that, you responded to the guy from Germany the other day about the Affordable Health Care Act and what that's going to do with it. But this privatization stuff, that doesn't, the Affordable Health Care doesn't stop that. This is wrong.
No, it doesn't.
People's pain like this. It is so unethical and immoral. God, these are killers and murderers that run these hospitals.
And that run the insurance companies.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, the silver lining to me for the Affordable Care Act is the expansion of the Medicaid, because that is an expansion of a single-payer health care system.
Right, but like you said, you got to be so indigent, you got to be so down on your luck to qualify for that.
Well, that's the way you used to be. But a lot of that changes under the Medicaid expansion in the states that choose to elect to expand it, because it goes to 137% of the poverty line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to take in a lot of working families.
Right.
Because 137% for a family of 5, you know, say mom, dad, and 3 little kids, 137% of the poverty line for a family of 5 is around $36,000 a year.
Yeah.
Well, that's gonna put a lot of working families on a universal single payer healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of hope to be had, Andy, out of that expansion, as long as we can keep the Republicans from damned well destroying it. Oh, but you mentioned Bayonne, New Jersey, and expensive. Did you catch this business with the special election to replace Frank Lautenberg?
Well, I can imagine what Chris Christie's going to do, the type of person he's going to appoint. I didn't realize there was actually going to be a special election. I thought he was just going to appoint somebody till the end of Lautenberg.
Well, no, there's a special election, but Chris Christie has chosen to have the special election for his replacement 3 weeks before the general election.
So you'll get almost no turnout in a place where stupid is a way of life in New Jersey.
Right, and it's going to cost $12 million to do it.
Well, who cares if he wins? I mean, if a Republican wins, that's well worth it. A lot of things aren't worth it, but getting a Republican in the Senate for the Koch brothers.
Yeah, and I just saw this list of stuff that Chris, you know, and you know, lest anybody want to run off and deliver chocolates and flowers to Chris Christie because he gave Barack Obama a hug or something. There's a little neat list here. The $12 million that special election 3 weeks before the general is going to cost would replace the $7.5 million that was cut from women's clinics, the $2 million that was cut from the budget for child care, the $2.2 million that was cut for nurses. It could restore 80% of the cuts handed down to the state that were stuck on the nursing homes. Yeah.
Those are poor people, Bob.
Right.
They don't matter.
Right. And in Chris Christie world, F them.
Not in his world. They're nothing. They don't exist. Not in his world.
Yeah.
These are both brothers, man. You saw where Brad Friedman actually caught the tape where him giving a presentation in Beaver Creek, Colorado to the rich elite of this country. He wouldn't even admit to it. No. Then the corporate media caught that one. But they got him on tape, you know, another one of these, some brave soul in that room actually taped it. And he gave a speech to the elite of the elite, the fascists who are truly running this country. And Chris Christie is their man. They can get him in 2016, you'll betcha they'll do everything they can. And you'll have Republicans like Mr. Obama. And again, Mr. Obama has turned out to be, he is the problem in this country. He is the consummate problem, not the solution to this country. God, he has been so bad. Matter of fact, I tell people, you know, my years on this planet, and I'm 55 years old, who is the worst president you had? I think it's Barack Obama, because he is so selling working people down the river, it isn't funny. He's doing more to bust this New Deal than anybody I've ever seen. God, he gets me so upset. And him with Chris Christie watching that garbage go on. Anyway, don't get me off.
No, I understand. And well, you will enjoy. They asked Christie about him costing New Jersey extra money for this special election. His response, Andy: I don't know what the cost is, and frankly, I don't care.
There you go. They don't. You know, I was in New Jersey, and I voted when Lautenberg ran. That last night, I voted for a guy named Rob Andrews in the primary, who has his problems too. He's under ethics investigation, but at least he wouldn't have been ranked. You just knew Lautenberg was going to croak. I mean, you just knew this was going to happen because the guy was sick before this. He had cancer problems. You knew this was going to happen.
Well, he was 89.
Right. And all I hear is positive things said about Frank. Hey, Frank Lautenberg. It was just a toady of Wall Street. He was in the back pocket of the hedge fund men, the private equity people, anything they wanted. Dodd-Frank watered down. Yeah, that was his deal, watering down Dodd-Frank. So I even heard Ralph Nader saying positive things about Lautenberg. Baloney. This is Wall Street.
Well, he was responsible for banning smoking in federal buildings that serve children.
Yeah, beautiful. That's kind of a no-brainer, isn't it? I mean, these are no-brainer things, these health things. I mean, great. But when it comes to really doing something like to tax Wall Street and get rid of the carried interest loophole paying 15% like Romney does, he went to bat for them. That's the reason we don't get that kind of legislation. And that's why we don't have higher tax brackets. I mean, he protects the money. He was a CEO, for God's sake, of Advanced Data Processing. That's his background.
Oh, ADP. I had no idea.
Yeah, he was one of the co-founders of the company. He's a CEO. He's so establishment. It isn't so Wall Street. It isn't funny. You know, like, make sure Wall Street pays no taxes. Life goes on. There's total deregulation of everything. Glass-Steagall, bring it down. You know, let the mortgage people do whatever they want. You know, deregulate everything. That was his gig. He was right on board with that. And don't tax them. You know, let the private equity guy pay their 15%. That's it. David Tepper, hedge fund guy, makes $7 billion.
Oh, I know that name.
15% tax. Yeah, he's the big hedge fund guy, and then you got the
Backing up just a minute, Andy. You're getting a little bit of some amens and some hosannas from the amen corner. Dr. John just wrote in and said, "Great point, Andy. Colonoscopy should be a free routine procedure by law, as should basic preventative screenings for breast and cervical cancer. And how about this as a free human medical right? The test for the inherited breast cancer gene that Angelina Jolie underwent, and then if it's detected, a mastectomy if the patient so chooses." What's the counter-argument, Dr. John asks? Or rather, how does the counter-argument not end up with, "We just think you're too expensive to live"? And then, lo and behold, there's Angelina Jolie's breast cancer test turning out to be the case that's due to be decided by the Supreme Court any minute now.
Well, wasn't it Benjamin Franklin? An ounce of protection is worth a pound of cure?
Sure.
I mean, simple as that.
But, you know, the question before the Supreme Court now is,
were they metastasized?
Can you, the question before the Supreme Court now, though, Andy, is, can you patent the ounce of prevention?
Yeah, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, correct?
Yeah.
Well,
what kind of a, but in 2013 America, Andy, we ask, what kind of profit can we make on the ounce of prevention?
40,000 people are dying a year because they don't have health care. See, that's great for Angelina Jolie, but you're right, Dr. John's so correct. Let's stop this stuff nipping in the bud early so we don't have to pay the big money. And that's why we have 18% of our GDP goes to health care, double what other developed nations pay in the OECD.
And yet, oddly enough, they have better outcomes than we do.
Right, and they have everybody insured. And we don't. And their administrative costs are 2% compared to our 30 to 35% administrative costs, just sucking the money out of the system to the executive class.
And, you know, one of the things that New York Times article did reference, the one that talked about colonoscopies and so forth, is the fact that other developed nation governments actively participate in setting prices for procedures and drugs. And with the exception of the VA and Medicare, the United States does not.
Absolutely. You know, the Republicans fight that tooth and nail.
Sure.
They want this free market baloney, which isn't the free market because we have monopolies. No free market. And when it comes to health care, of course, I mean, you brought this up many times. Yeah, you're going to go call the hospital before you go there after you've been in a car accident. And you're going to go shop around. You're unconscious after getting hit by a car, and you're going to go shop around to where the cheapest hospital. Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Healthcare is something that doesn't fit the free market model whatsoever. I mean, you do not have the expertise to make the decisions, and nor do you have the time to make the decisions you have to make in a free market. You don't have that in healthcare. It's a totally different animal. It does not lend itself to this free market baloney, like a lot of other things don't lend itself to this privatized free market baloney.
Well, can we not just come to a general agreement, Andy, that there are just things in this life, on this planet, that should not be a part of the profit motive?
Yes, and healthcare is one of them.
Well, yeah, municipal water systems, for God's sakes, electric power grids.
Right.
Healthcare, right. Yeah. And that's not to say that I want anybody working in any of these things to live some sort of pauper's existence, because it's pretty clear that that under a universal single-payer healthcare plan or under tightly regulated energy and utility dispersal. You know, I haven't heard about any water officials or power company people, you know, living under the bridge drinking the screw top wine.
Well, especially like here, we have this Pacific Gas and Electric who likes to blow up people.
Oh Jesus,
and
yeah.
Profits come.
San Bruno, right?
In the lines, right. Checking the lines, that's way down the line. Matter of fact, you give bonuses to executives that take the money out of doing the preventive maintenance things that have to be done and tracking and upgrading the lines. Because, you know, you have a base of customers that can't go anywhere else. They're stuck. You buy from them, but you don't get heat. And you ain't going to have electricity. So they do whatever they want, and it's just so wrong. I believe all our utilities should be municipal. I've lived under both, man, and the municipal utilities, I think, are 100% better.
Yeah.
You can't privatize that. It's a monopoly.
More effective, more responsive when they're publicly owned? Absolutely. And, frankly, you wind up with better infrastructure because instead of trying to worry about plowing profits back into quarterly profit and loss statements and keeping the shareholders handy and whatnot, well, look, you've got extra money for upgrades and for line extensions and for maintenance. And, yeah, of course, I'm an optimist.
What I don't understand either is venture capital and private equity people trying to get entrepreneurship going for people to be entrepreneurs. If you're going to be an entrepreneur, it's awful nice to have health care. It's awful nice to have these things that you don't have to worry about so you can concentrate on doing something that actually might add value in the private sector to society and grow a business. If you don't have to worry about a lot of things where your expenses are low, like your electricity, and knowing you're going to get the electricity and knowing you're not going to get price gouged, or knowing you're going to get health care and everybody's going to get it, so you don't have to worry about that. So you can go do your entrepreneurial stuff and go for it. But, man, you just have totally snuffed out entrepreneurship when people have to worry about going off on their own and doing some kind of invention that's actually could actually make a lot of money and employ a lot of people. You think twice if you're going to lose your health care to do that.
Sure.
Or you're not going to be able to have the electricity or, you know, the type of infrastructure, if phone and utility services, if that's all you're getting price gouged. How do you do that? I mean, this totally destroys an entrepreneurial-oriented free market economy anyway when you have monopolists like this, because they just price gouge the entrepreneurs. The whole thing is wrong. And Republicans, I don't understand why Republicans don't get that aspect.
I think they do because there was a story out about the new study that was commissioned by the Young Republicans. And I don't know if you ran across this, but it's quite fascinating.
I've been out of commission the past 2 months, like I said, basically just with my head down.
Well, the Young Republicans wanted to know what happened to the other Young Republicans. And so this was published or released by the College Republican National Committee. And what their little poll found, let's see, Politico reports this. Regarding gay marriage, on the open-minded issue, we will face serious difficulty so long as the issue of gay marriage remains on the table. Regarding Hispanics, Latino voters tend to think the GOP couldn't care less about them. Then this. Perception of the party's economic stance. We've become the party that will pat you on your back when you make it, but won't offer you a hand to help you get there. There you go.
Like,
I mean, they know what their problem is.
Right, and the way around that is to obfuscate, to distort, and to mislead the public. Their solution is use the Madison Avenue propaganda. And keep on course. I mean, that's what they'll probably, they'll just try to think of the propaganda to smooth that over and make it look like they are the party for those.
Dr. John really likes your comment about entrepreneurs. He said, that's a great point. Isn't that the point of the commons, he asks? Externalize as much as possible and let people take care of issues that they want to, like starting a business? So, you know, wouldn't it therefore be wiser to make things like healthcare a part of the commons so that if you want to devote your life to building your widget factory, well, you can do that and not be destroyed if you get sick?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know, particularly in Europe, friends I have there, when you don't have to worry about health care, you can leave your job and do something else and go pursue your dream. Here, you got to think twice. You're taking a risk, big time, losing that health care. I mean, it just stifles the economy where people in Europe...
And creativity.
Right.
You know, isn't it funny that we came up with a way whereby one could allegedly transport one's retirement via a 401k, but we haven't figured out a way to make health care portable?
Yeah.
And it's just not a priority. It's just not a priority. Hey, Andy, it's been a great conversation, and I hope you will, welcome back to the immediacy of the live broadcast, but I hope we'll hear from you soon, because being up here in Washington, D.C., this is a weird, weird place, I got to tell you.
It certainly is, Bob. I spent a lot of time in front of that White House protesting when I was on the East Coast, no question about it. There's some weird stuff dealing with politicians, because, you had, I think, David from Berkeley the other day mentioning Kevin Mullen, who's my assemblyman, and Jackie Speier. You know, working with those people...
Oh, like, that was Larry. That was Larry, like yeah.
Oh, that was Larry?
Yeah.
Okay, Berkeley. You know, I've talked to Kevin Mullen, and man, you know, I get one answer from one person, you know, how good he's going to be, and he's not going to do things he did in the past, and then we talked to the... He laughed in my face. He thought it was a big joke. And I'll tell you, I wasn't laughing. Man, that guy pissed me off. I'm not laughing, man. When you don't give it, like, I think I just sent you an email. There are 12 slots to the assembly delegate district to go to the state convention. The party, bigwigs, the establishment took all 12 and knocked our DFA group out. And he thought that was really funny. He thought that was really, we're just not competitive. We just didn't get enough people out to vote. Ha, ha, ha. Ha, ha, ha. I ain't laughing, Jack. You know, a lot of, you know, and like Jackie Speier, hey, she's real good on gun issues. I mean, matter of fact, she's worth a couple million. I think she's worth like $26 million or something like that, I've heard quoted. And she's great on gun issues. Like, she'll go out and throw her own money, a couple $100,000, at these gun buyback programs. And she's great. She's done this a couple times, and they collect a lot of guns. You know, they give out like $100 a rifle, $50 a pistol, something like that. And she's very successful. You know, they'll get 300, 400, 700 weapons on a Saturday morning, people hand it. You know, they're real successful, and she does that. She's really good on the gun stuff. She's really great also with women's issues in the military as far as trying to stop the rape stuff. But, God, get a lot of progressive issues, you know, like we just talked about the vote on the GMO and the vote on the food stamp stuff. She got to lunch. She's like, they're like one-trick ponies, man. They got to focus someplace, and they highlight that.
But, you know, and I'm not suggesting that.
I don't know what I'm doing. But, God, and the ACAC, another, you know, can't get her to budge, man.
You know, I'm not suggesting that your analysis is in any wise wrong, Andy, because I think it's largely correct. But God Almighty, can we not extrapolate? Have you not just identified the problem with the entire progressive universe, or whatever we want to call it? That we so many of us have this myopia where we can't understand that we do have sort of overlapping Venn diagram layers of commonalities. And when, you know, because so many of us are one-trick ponies, so many of us are single issue, when the fact of the matter is a progressive should be all about human rights and should be able to comprehend that everything that we're talking about, everything that matters inside progressive politics, boils down to human rights. It makes me crazy. And I know it does you, too, because... You know,
let's have a little consistency here. Let's have a little consistency that you know, all people, like you said, deserve to be treated equally and to be served with human rights and dignity and respect. And in some areas, these politicians seem to understand that and flaunt it and really go for it. In other areas, it's like a blind spot.
Right, and then you wake up one morning and a good alleged progressive like Tom Harkin out of Iowa has voted to cut $4 billion out of food stamps, and you just go, what the?
Yeah, he was right. He was one of those that did that. It blows your mind.
And you know, if you could come up with a cogent explanation for it, you could at least intellectualize it to some degree or another. But it don't make no sense.
You know, it kills me too. I talked to one of her staffers about the AIC Act, Jackie Speier, and the response is, "What are you worrying about those people for in West Virginia? They're so far away." Oh my God! And I told you this before. And I told the whole audience this before. What is up with that type of logic? Because they're so far away and their human rights and dignity are being disrespected, having just basic food and water not be toxic, a livable environment, and they're so far away that you don't care about them. If they were in California, you would care. If they were doing mountaintop removal here, then it'd be an issue. But since they're so far away, they're expendable.
Jeez.
Come on, man. What's the problem? What's the logic here? Yeah. I mean, we're totally right in line. Let's have some consistency across the board. You worry about women in the military getting raped left and right, and yeah, that's bad. That's a bad thing. But what about the folks in Appalachia getting their food supply and air supply and water supply just totally decimated by this hideous, toxic, poisonous industry, man? Same logical thing, you'd think. Anyway.
Yeah, it's crazy making.
This wise. Great show, Bob. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Andy. It's so good to hear back from you live. You have a good evening, and hope we'll hear back from you again soon.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, take care. Man, Andy has got some fire in the belly, and it's awful good to hear back from him. I know he's been, like he said, tied up for a little while. Listen, if you are on hold, please stay that way. But we are more than 2 hours into this this Tuesday evening, Titanic Tuesday program. If you're on hold, stay that way. We'll be right back. I've got to take a break, and then we'll come back to your calls. All right? I'd love to be able to play some bumper music, but that's just not going to happen for me right now. So what's going to happen is... it's just going to be silence, not even any glockenspiel music. Hey, by the way, thanks to Barry. Thanks a lot, Barry, for helping us meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. We are now only $25 away from meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, and I really hope we can do that tonight because it's going to make Shirley really happy. We'll be back. This is The Horn. And we are back with Tunes Free Tuesday, I guess. Let's go right back to the phones. And Agnes, you say Kevin's with us? Hello, Kevin? Well, we'll find out in a minute. Then let's go to Jeff.
Hello, you're Jeff in Albany here. How are you?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
Good and bridges here, but that's the game. When I listen to people trying to make this thing happen, you know, we talk about the politics, we talk about the minimum wage, we talk about all this it's frustrating. I mean, it's absolutely frustrating. When you went off the air for a while, I got worried about it. Yeah. Anyway.
No. I announced I was taking a break before I left, and that we can't play music right now. So that's what that was.
But here's the deal. We've discussed this. I put up Windows. I go to a computer to do some video work, and I happened to have came with Windows 8 on it. And I got some, and I did everything I could do, and I got to a certain point of frustration. And I built the service plan for, 4 years with the online help. So I phoned up and I figured I was going to get a runaround. And I got a woman, I think they were from India, but I'm not sure. But she was very, very helpful. And we got talking. And she was tremendously helpful. She put on the audacity. She put on Skype. She put on everything I needed to put on. And we chatted back and forth. And I mentioned to her, I said, wouldn't it be nice if you worked 20 hours a week and you had your minimum wage was your schooling, your food, and your shelter? And I mean, clean calories, clean water, and clean air. She said, we need clean water and we need more schooling. And she mentioned to me how hard she did work, and I was really taken aback with her, and I asked her to please look up our website and please email us and we'd like to get her on some programming. And I said, and what you learn about it, I'd like to start your own chapter about a human energy measurement so you have a quality of life. And the minimum wage, if we don't get this minimum wage to be not measured in currency anywhere in the world, it has to be schools for all. Once you have schools for all, you have more scholars and more professors. And you have more engineers and more artists and more just across the board. And once you have more schools, then you can give people the clean food and clean air and clean water, and then you can give them shelter that they're proud of, whatever their culture would be. And I can't understand why we can't understand where us progressives don't understand that. I mean, you ask Corwin about we're fixating on specific things. You're right, and you can't change this. Bob, I worked on the Hill for years about renewable energy since 1968. And just recently I realized that my fight wasn't in vain, but the reality is I'm working under an economic system that will not allow our political system or our monetary system or our energy systems to change because of the economic system. Am I just crazy about this, or do I have some support?
Jeff, if it's something that you can see in your mind, then I think you're probably ahead of a lot of us, because the problems that most of us have are so profoundly immediate that I don't know how can I put this. When there's a snake attached by the fangs to your leg, and a wolf gnawing on your arm, getting beyond the immediate becomes rather difficult.
Well, I can actually put this in very hard reality. We have a very large woodlot up here in New York, and we have a house on it. One of my best friends, who is a professor, retired in one of those houses, and he loved to make fires, and I was walking one day when I used to work a job for real, and I went off to work to loosen, don't burn today because it's going to be, it's a little windy. And I got back from work early that day, and my woods were ablaze. And I ran over to loosen to see if he's all right. He's got a hose out, and he's putting the fire out in front of his house. Now, that's a good thing to do. I said, Lucian, I said, did you call the fire department? He said, no, I'm too busy putting out the fire in the front of the house. Well, that's the problem. We're so busy putting out the fires in front of our house, we don't know where the flamethrower is coming from. I'm not saying not to put your fires out and not fix the way the rubber hits the road, but if we don't understand where the problem is coming from, and I don't think we do. We're worried about mountaintop removal. Of course we are. We're worried about fracking. Of course we're worried about fracking. We're worried about people the insanity of our political system? Of course we are. But where is it starting from? What is the root cause of all this? And if you step back for a minute and just look at
I can give you that answer in a minute. Capitalism.
Well, capitalism is the economic system. So how do we change? What is wrong with the economic system? I'm saying to you, it's strictly the way it's been since 6,000 or more years. It's been a lack of measurement for a human being's worth, and they never ever have been able to put a measurement on it. But a human being cannot be measured in dollars and cents or gold and silver. It can only be measured in quality of life. And if someone works 20 hours a week with the natural resources we have in this world, they can easily have schooling, food, and shelter. And my God, what the hell is wrong with us? Why can't we see that? So we can have a minimum wage with these asses. And they pass legislation for minimum wage, which means absolutely nothing. Minimum wage must be a quality of life for those three items on a worldwide basis, and that stops our wars or helps stop our wars. They're still going to be crazy to fight. But I mean, this came to me as an epiphany. I listen to both sides of this. The conservative side, and they're all screaming about the Obama, and then this one's screaming about the liberals, and this one's screaming about the progressives, and then I listen to the progressive side, and I lean toward progressive thinking. In fact, I hit them anyway. Long story. One day I'll call you up and tell you how I really think. But this is frustrating to me as all get out, because if you sit back, just think about what I'm saying, and our minimum wage on a worldwide basis should just push this issue out that if we work 20 hours a week toward a resource-based economy, but let's forget about that. Let me go that far. Just say 20 hours a week on minimum wage in any currency in the world would be school, food, and shelter. Don't you think this would change the whole thing? Are you there?
Yeah, no, I'm here, but I don't know if it would change the whole thing.
I'm not asking you to think about it like this very second.
Well, no. Ever since we've started talking, I've been thinking about it, and I've thought about the quantitative metrics that we apply to other parts of the natural world as we understand it. You know, there's a measure of energy, of heat, and it's a calorie. And 1,000 of those are a kilocalorie. We can measure radiation, and we've got names for that. And we can measure lengths, and we've got names, you know, millimeters and centimeters and meters and kilometers.
Go ahead.
And that's what I'm saying, Jeff, about maybe you see something more clearly than for instance I do, and I certainly don't claim to be some sort of repository of wisdom or understanding, because I certainly am not. But I don't know, how can you measure? And I think this is the thing, and I tend to think in terms of old stuff.
I think in terms of old stuff.
Yeah, we want to talk about measuring human value, but in the effort to put a value on it, I think we run into trouble in its own right. And maybe that's just because I'm trapped in some model somewhere. But I think, and I've talked about whoever this person was repeatedly over the years, because it's one of those profound moments for me. But I think about the man or the woman who, with a not terribly effective light in the first place, crawled God knows how far back in a cave in the foothills of the Pyrenees and started and mixed paints in low light and started painting mammoths or horses or ibexes or doing hand prints on a cave wall in the damn dark. And this predates that 6,000 years ago moment that you're talking about.
Go ahead. I go ahead.
And how do we say that? I mean, how do you value that? I mean, it's impossible to value it now because it's so ancient and so precious.
Hey, you can easily say 6,000 years ago there was an economic system that was reasonably valued equally. In other words,
so you're talking about whatever system existed before human beings became sedentary.
Well, once we started trading from Africa from the West to Africa, then there was really slavery, by the way, even way back when. But that was if you stole something, they put you into, as far as back we can see, you went into slavery or servitude. But then you worked your way right out of it,
I'm back before that. I'm talking about before agriculture.
Hey, go back to caveman days. But caveman days was basically.
Well, I prefer the term hunter gatherer over caveman, because we associate certain things with cave people. But we know because the work's been done that those people had more leisure time than you or I do.
That's what I was getting at. They had more quality of life even back in the caveman days. And he went a little further into Africa when they had some kind of a society. And then once you put the economic system in, that's when the entire system started to go down the tubes just before Christ, with the slavers the kings were nothing more than thugs with armies. And they would rape the women, and they would tell you if they were a benevolent king, you got away with a comfortable lifestyle. But most of them weren't benevolent. And what happened is things got out of hand throughout the years, and then all of a sudden we had, in a very short amount of time, the U.S. came about. I'm jumping like crazy over all this other stuff. But we had a small, very short time where we were alive, like my father and probably me over the last two generations, and you, of course. We had the last generations of where we had a reasonably good quality of life, but you and I can see it slipping away. We have just enough education to say there's something wrong. The Occupy groups say there is something wrong all over the world. It's not just
but,
here.
But you know what, Jeff? I also have enough education to know that when I look and say, you know, it's worked okay for me or for a generation, that there's a whole lot of people that have been left out of that I'm not thinking about.
Well, my point is exactly that. If you and I, who have the we've been lucky enough, and I don't like to use blessed enough because I'm not in that.
Yeah, I try to stay away from that word too.
But we're lucky enough because of the way nature worked and the way society worked for us, then we have the, and you feel the same way I do, we feel as though we are cursed with the obligation of helping the rest of the planet. And it's not a blessing, it's a curse. And once you learn something and have the, and this comes into your mind about how we can fix the planet, you can't let it go. And that's a horrendous problem. I mean, I would love to be able to go around and get on my sailboat and sail all over the country. So I just can't do it. I have these little snakes chewing up, the snakes you mentioned that are biting you in the feet. I had these little snakes chasing me around that says, listen, you can't not do radio. You can't not do public speaking. You must get this information out. You must, because it's so important. But I didn't know where it came from until about 3 years ago. It was like, wow, did I waste my time for the 40 or 50 years of my adult life? So I'm just saying that this just came about. I've been pushing the rock up the hill for renewable energy since 16.
No, and believe me, I respect the time you spent pushing the rock.
But it's
the conversation we had the other night, Jeff. It's, you know, one, you can, you know, the minute you say capitalism, the minute you say Marxism, the minute you say socialism, some portion of your potential audience who deserves better turns off because we've mentioned an ism. Okay.
How about humanitarianism? Does that turn off most of the audience?
No, that'll only turn off your fundamentalists because they'll think you're a secular humanist.
but the reality is that we need, instead of a capitalistic society or a doggy dog society or a doggy dog economy, which is the common name doggy dog, we could very simply, and I don't mean this, and I mean this, it could be simply done. If we all understood that every human being when they're born has certain rights. By the way, the pursuit of happiness is strictly a pursuit. Happiness is in your mind. But having schooling and having all the schooling you can get and having clean food, clean water, and clean air and having clean calories and having a reasonably comfortable place to live. It doesn't have to be a mansion, just comfortable. That lets you pursue your happiness a little easier. But what I'm saying is that we need you just to get rid of that door-to-door economic system, and we need to get to a humanitarian system that's an economic system. And once we put that measurement in place, and it is a measurement, but it can't be done. And the reason why you can't get out of this is the same reason I had a hell of a time trying to get out of this. We've been writing about this now for almost a year. We were in a conference in Croatia to talk about this. And now I know this is so esoteric because you got to look with a, you know, I got to look at when my kid's car breaks down, he can't afford a new car, or you know, we know there's problems. We have to look at our grandchildren having. I've got to look at where the flamethrower is coming from because I can spend my whole life helping my kid become a society, you know, to help him out, buy him a house or buy him a car. But that's not going to do any good because the grandchildren are going to suffer if we don't see where the flame's coming from. So I'm just saying to you, if you sit back and realize that we're in a cannibalistic world, someone else mentioned that last week on your program, but we can't see any further than this because we're in it. But once you realize that we can, that all that's missing is that measurement, just to start out with so people have a basic quality of life that gives you those three items which are called freedom, that's the beginning of the change. And then we have to change, the only thing we have to change is get our politicians to change the way we do GDP or GNP. When we change that to make sure that every country in the world that will get our support if they make sure that their population has those three items, education, food, and shelter, then we help them out. That's how we should be doing GDP. Of course we're going to have to get rid of the World Bank. Of course we're going to have to get rid of the IMF. Or we can change their hands. But these wealthy people will still remain wealthy. You're not going to ever take them down. There's no possible way. And you don't even want to take them down. You just want to bring the quality of life up to the poverty stricken all over the world. And that would change the whole game. I'm sorry, I'm rambling.
No, you're not rambling in the least, Jeff. It is very seldom that an issue comes my way that just leaves me feeling dumb.
You're not dumb. You're doing the best you can within the system.
This is one that does it to me because, you know, I've asked the question, and I'm not an economic mind. I'm some sort of a mind, but I think we've isolated the fact that it ain't economic.
The economics of this system is like a religion. It's a belief system. If you believe in it, it works. We've had economists on our programs, book writers, a fellow by the name of Gowdy was on, John Gowdy from RPI. He's a great guy. He explained to me, he said the economic system is a belief system. If you believe in it, it works. And if you don't believe in it, it falls apart. So that means it's a totally subjective system. And it's based on taking from your neighbor or taking from your friend or killing people. It's a door-to-door world.
Well, but Jeff, it matters who does the believing, okay? And what I mean by that is if you're working three minimum wage jobs, you don't have much choice, and it doesn't much matter whether you believe in it or not. You're just out there pulling the dasher up and pushing the dasher down and working the damn churn.
I'm going to give you another one. I told you about the woman over, I think, in India. I'm not quite sure. I'm sorry. I didn't ask her what country she was at. But she loved it. And this woman is great with the computer. I said, let me tell you something, kid. I'm an old man. I said, but you look at this website and you go on Wikipedia and look at human energy renewable measurement. And then you take what you think of that and you start your own chapter. But if you need help, email us, call us up, phone us up, anything you need to do. But then yesterday I got a blowout, a brand new car. I mean, just annoying on Sunday. So unfortunately, I don't like to go to Walmart, but that's the only thing open to change the damn tire. So they changed the tire for me, and they said, you need a new tire. I had road hazard assistance on the thing. So yesterday morning, I woke up like a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, drove over to the Ford dealer, and I found out that I have coverage for everything excepting for that tire. It's like, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, other thing. And then they charged me like $250 for a tire. I said, that's ridiculous. So I drove over across the street, and I told the guy I need a tire. But I can lift you for $100, brand new tire, better than what you got in the house. Great, do it. And I got talking to him about this home idea. Well, this guy was really a smart guy working with him because, you know, I got all kinds of degrees. I'm working 3 jobs. Well, the guy next to him heard my conversation. He said, do you have any paperwork on this? You know, these guys are working 2 and 3 jobs to support their family. But they know there's a problem. They know they have to do something about it. So if we keep on complaining about the Republicans and the Democrats and chase our tails for, and I've been doing the same thing. I couldn't get my head around that what the problem was. Once I was able to think that I no longer want to be accountable, I realize that I'm in a cannibal system. I have to start eating, you know, no more red meat. I mean, not that I'm doing that metaphorically. I'm not meaning it for real. But anyway, that's the story.
Well, you certainly created a discussion, and you are doing so in an ongoing basis, Jeff. I just had a note in, for instance, from Jack in Shreveport, and he says, under the subject line wealth, he says, what we need to come to grips with is that there is absolutely no reason for any one person or company to accumulate so much wealth as we have let them. There is no public good that comes from people accumulating that much wealth or that much power. And
I agree with that comment. But in this society, in the way our economic system works, there is no reason why they can't. Because that's perfectly acceptable. A matter of fact, we applaud a person who's a psychopath who let people die to accumulate human energy and labor for hoarding it. That's all the money he represents is intellect, is blown brains. That's all they're hoarding, and no one needs that much. They can't.
Well, that distillation that Dr. John came up for, he said that healthcare, you know, healthcare arguments wind up being a matter of some variation on the theme of you're just too expensive to let live.
Well, that's the other thing. Once you have education for all and as high as they can go, then you're going to have a heck of a lot more doctors. I don't put the word healthcare. I used to have 4 items. Education, healthcare, food and shelter. But I took healthcare out. I threw that into the education. I also threw population growth into the education mix. So I keep it down to 3 because it was a lightning rod. Now, the same thing you talked about earlier in this conversation about a lightning rod being the isms of socialism, capitalism, Marxism. That's their lightning rods. I grant you that. But the thing is, all these isms never had a measurement for what a human being was worth. And Occupy groups had a measurement and explained the measurement, say, here's what we are worth as a minimum basis. Now we have 5 years of college, we maybe were 5 times more. We have maybe 15 years experience, so that's 20 times more than a person who doesn't have it or first starting with stuff. I don't know what that top number would be. And also, I'm a blonde, good-looking person. They don't have to come to me. So I'm worth a little more. And you can make millions of dollars an hour if you choose, but you've got to put it back to the system so the people sweeping your floor can put their kids through school. I don't know what the top number is. We're working with another group called Energy, with an M instead of an N. And they have a formula for that. I'm trying to get them to move forward with it. It's like pulling teeth. But my point is that if we can get some more programming on just what this is, what is the problem? It is, by the way, if you fix the economic system, if you can get this measurement in place, the political system would normally fall into place because the profit margin's gone. The profit, if we can get the economic system where we can actually get the tax structure back pre-Reagan, then everything sort of falls into place, not because people are less greedy, but it's because it's cheaper to pay your health more money, real money, or real quality of life, and do some research and development because the stockholder doesn't want any. He's afraid he'd have to pay too much. And the CEO doesn't want any. They'll just give him a new car and a house once in a while. He'd be happy as could be. And they have a quality of life that's superior to if they're working their asses off, they're going to get more. But the reality is they have to put back to the system so the guy who can't do that has a good quality of life. And if you did that around the world, you could probably get rid of the military complex the way it stands today. You might make them into to soldiers to help the world instead of hurting them. And then the country has a problem, and if they're taking care of their population, the rest of the world kicks into the problem. I mean, this is... I can't see
you
that.
You know what? You just mentioned the population issue, and something just flashed in my brain, that statistic out there, Jeff, that says if you want a functioning, healthy society, the first thing you have to do is give women control over the workings of their own bodies and when they are pregnant and when they are not.
You're preaching to the choir.
And that's what I keep looking for. You know, what is that first positive step? What's that first thing to do? What's that first step on the road? What's that first step out of the bathtub or whatever? And a lot of people working on finding it. And you know, I applaud you for having the determination to keep seeking it.
Well, the thing is, I have...
Because you know, some of the great things that have happened to humanity have happened as a result of determined... pursuit of knowledge. Then there's the stuff that we just stub our toes on and it changes the world. And you know, it seems like you've been determinedly seeking. But Jeff, I've got to roll because I want to make sure that everybody who's been on hold gets to get on the air, especially having missed a show or so.
Bob, thanks for the time and I sent you an email. Give me a holler and get a chance. Thanks so much.
All right, will do. You take care, Jeff. Bye now. Jeff calling from upstate New York. And onward to Kevin in Colorado Springs. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, good evening, man.
How are you?
I'm doing good. An interesting conversation with you and Jeff. And then I really enjoyed the conversation between you and Andy today. It seemed like you all covered just about everything in that whole conversation there. And it's what Jeff was saying, I think, has some meaning in that he's trying to find the step to go into. But I think in listening to him, I rule to play in this. And it does matter that we occasionally do step back and see where we're going and where we've been. But it's just as important for you to be out there doing the Yank Act and someone out there doing another cause. And he said something about us being a cannibalistic society. And the truth is we don't have to be that way. It could be different. And I think there are progressives that are working to make that happen. It's changing the minds of people, and like you said, when you bring up Marxism or capitalism or socialism, people do zone out because of the isms. But
that drives me absolutely
right. That doesn't mean we should, you know.
Well, it puts me beside myself because that only tells me how effective the other side has been in not just poisoning the debate or violating the dialogue, but in keeping it from even happening. And yep. That's another case, Kevin, where they don't like a level playing field. They don't want us on the playing field.
Exactly. And there was something I wanted to react to. You said that I might be quoting it a little bit differently, but he said that an economic system is kind of like a belief system. If it works, if you believe in it, it works, and if you don't believe in it, it doesn't work. Well, it's kind of like a religious system is the way he said it. And you and I both know that religious systems, no matter how much we want to believe, some people might want to believe in a religious system, it doesn't work. And it's the same way with an economic system. Just because I believe that a certain economic system works doesn't mean it does. It
may be right, and see when...
wealth, but it's not working for you or because you don't have the same amount of wealth. And that's where...
Right, and that's the fluid nature of any definition of the word functioning or working.
Right.
Capitalism is not working for somebody in the Niger Delta who gets dragged out of his home in the dark of night and gets two bullets put behind his ear because he's proven to be just a little bit too annoying for, say, ExxonMobil. Okay? Right. Capitalism's not working for him. On the other hand, across half the global way, the CEO of ExxonMobil wakes up the next morning, and it's another beautiful morning to be him.
Exactly.
And part of that is definitional. The fact that something works for some people does not mean that the thing itself works.
Exactly.
Counterfeiting money works for counterfeiters as long as they don't get caught and as long as they don't completely crash the currency.
Right.
But that does not mean that counterfeiting works.
Exactly.
I'm convinced, utterly, totally, completely, absolutely convinced that capitalism is a complete and utter brutal failure on the face of this planet.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
It grew out of the pernicious doctrines of mercantilism that operated under the European monarchs, and much like the church, has killed more people than it has helped.
Yep.
And yet we continue to insist that it is somehow a success, when it can only be referred to as a success by those for whom it has been a rousing one. Because generally speaking, workaday folks care about feeding their children, keeping wild things off them in the night and the dark, and having some sort of non-hateful relationship with waking up the next morning.
Right.
Well, there's a whole lot more people in this world that capitalism is not working for than it is working for.
Right.
But once again, we let the people for whom it is working define whether it is working.
Exactly.
At the expense of the rest of us. And you can apply that question to the Keystone XL pipeline. You can apply it to fracking. You can apply it to mountaintop removal. You can apply it to women's sovereignty over their own bodies. You can apply it to issues of race. You can apply it to issues of sexuality. And it works every time.
That's where I liked what Jeff said. Toward the end of his call, he talked about someone being so rich and they need to put back into the system. And that's the biggest problem with capitalism today, is that the very rich have no interest in putting back into the system to make sure that this government works for all of us. And that's just speaking of here in America.
Well, here, let's go ahead and ask the next question then, Kevin. If a governmental system is predicated on some degree of economic abuse, how can it be said to be working for all of us or even a majority of us? You know, I think back by analogy to what Dr. Bill has been saying about Charles Beard and his economic analysis of the ratification of the Constitution. You know, and what Dr. Bill said is, you know, there are a lot of people who have attacked Beard, but none who have refuted him.
Exactly.
And the fact of the matter is, you know, Beard was arguing that the Constitution was framed for a very limited group of narrowly interested people. And it worked great for them.
That's right, but it didn't work so well for the common folk.
Well, you know, when your founding document starts out by defining a vast segment of your population as being three-fifths of a human being, I think you failed out of the gate.
And for supposed freedom lovers, even back in 1776, who said they believed in freedom and all the things they said they believed in, how they could be so blind to the fact that they were declaring some human beings to be only worth three-fifths of a human just blows my mind, and how they're praised now as the founding fathers, and they did such good things and died for freedom, blah, blah, blah. You know, come on. Let's get with true history here and not sugarcoat it. They did some good, just like you were talking about Lincoln. You know, the man was a much more complicated man than history wants to write him up as. And, you know, he is a hero for doing the emancipation for whatever reason he did. But he didn't do an emancipation based solely on humanitarian grounds. He did it a lot for political reasons and for the fact
Pure pragmatism, Kevin.
Exactly. And so, you know, I guess for me it's still saying that we are part of a team here, and the rules we play within that team are important. And just because I don't have the complete answer, as Jack was looking for, I don't want to step back too much and just step back and throw my hands up and say, you know, it can't be fixed, the heck with it, I'm not even going to try.
Well, I certainly understand that. Kevin, we've got to roll on, but it's awfully good to hear from you, and hopefully we'll talk later in the week.
All right, Bob, you have a good evening. Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye now. And there we have it, the end of this evening's program. I've certainly enjoyed it. And sorry for the absence of, like, music and stuff, because I know it gets confusing when I take a break and there's no music playing, but yeah, maybe I'll have that sorted soon. Listen, thank you very much, thanks to Jack and to Barry and to Beth. Between them, they brought us to $95 out of the $100 we needed to meet Shirley's Wisconsin challenge this evening. Thank you very, very much. Hopefully the other five will find its 95 friends sometime between now and 3 a.m. Eastern time, maybe, or something. But thank you. Thank you very much. A program note, probably no show tomorrow night. We have 8 meetings that start early in the afternoon and will probably go up into around 8 o'clock tomorrow evening. So my apologies. But back to the air on Thursday, without a doubt. Thanks to everybody who makes all this happen, all of it. First and foremost, you, your ideas, your communication, and your contributions make all of this both possible and worthwhile. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to my darling wife, Agnes, who is running the studio back at home. She produced Dr. Bill today. She will produce Dr. Bill Live tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Please check Dr. Bill out if you haven't already. You will find it profoundly salutary. Yeah. Thank you. So y'all have a great evening. Rick Smith is up next. And hopefully we will talk soon. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.